Welcome to episode one of The Rap Sheet. I'm your host, Samuel Gibbs, and I am the technology editor for Felix, the Imperial College student newspaper, and the technology editor for pixelatedgeek.com. With us today are...
I'm Vlad Savov, contributing editor at Engadget.
And I'm Richard Lai, what Vlad said. Yeah. Cool.
So, Vlad, I think you've got a topic for us today.
Right, well, we're going to start off... let's start off with just describing the format of how our podcast is going to work. Mm. We've all got a topic of our own, so there'll be three of those, and then we'll have a consensus topic at the end, which might be a bit predictable this week, given that the iPad has just come out, but we're not going to touch that until the very end, so let's hope you stick around until we get there, and we'll earn a bit of credibility by that point. But today we're going to start off with... a discussion of Android smartphones, which I've decided to dramatically title the iPhone Death Watch.
Nice.
Right, so what we want to discuss and find out is whether Android smartphones and the Android operating system has evolved sufficiently to make any one of us actually jump ship and buy an Android smartphone. So we want to go over to Richard, who's been doing a lot of Android... Android phone reviews.
What's going on? All right. Yeah. So I'll just go through what I've been playing with recently. So I've been playing with the HTC Legend, which is one of the latest Android smartphones from HTC. It's pretty slick, I must say. I mean, the phone itself has great build quality because that's just HTC. That's what I've been good at all this time. And then we've also had the HTC Desire, which is this brother from another mother from... actually, it's not. It's the same mother as the Google Nexus one.
Yes.
It is the same mother, yeah. But yeah, anyway, you get the idea. So the only difference really is that one has a special interface called the HTC Sense, whereas the Google phone is just a vanilla Google OS. Both have been working perfectly fine for me. Now, going back to the topic, we want to see whether it'll win maybe iPhone users over. And I don't know, have you guys been playing with these phones? I mean, Vlad's been playing with my review units.
Yes.
What do you think?
This was when Richard came over to my place looking like a walking Android salesman.
Oh, jeez.
Carrying all the HTC handsets and the Nexus One and the Dell Mini 5.
Nice.
Of course.
Which basically nobody else has. It's an exclusive, it's a very exclusive phone, and all the girls just,
it's
shocked
true.
By it.
It's true. The girls, they see it and they're like, wow, what, it's a phone? And then, I'm going to sound cocky now. So.
Yes. So,
how big it is.
It looks big. I mean, I don't know if you guys seen it, but we've done a pretty lengthy review of this phone on Engadget if you want to check it out.
It'd be in the rundown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Vlad, I mean, you've only briefly played with both the Android and yes. and iPhone as well, because you don't actually own a proper smartphone, right?
The only non-smartphone user here.
That's right, that's right. I am a very proud owner of a Sony Ericsson something, W395. It's
beautiful.
It's a beautiful dumb phone. Beautiful dumb phone.
And a battery lasts for like 2 years.
It does, In fact, it has a great battery.
But so what do you think? What do you think?
Well, I mean, let's just first take the Dell Mini 5 and just completely discount it, because that's not a phone.
It's not out yet. We don't even know if it's going
to
be.
You need trench coat pockets for that thing to fit inside.
You don't know. I have put up photos of the thing in my jeans.
I'm sorry, but you're not a very impartial judge because you paid a lot of money for that phone.
Yeah.
So we can't use that. But let's talk about the Desire, because that impressed me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spent some time with the Nexus One. I didn't actually like it when I first played with it. And that actually had to do with the physical design on the outside. The buttons were...
The touch-sensitive buttons on
the Nexus One. Touch-sensitive buttons were not ideal. There's a little nub which just looks and feels wrong to me. And all these things are really straightened out and done right on the Desire. And as far as I'm concerned, the Desire is at least equivalent to the iPhone in terms of the on-screen keyboard, which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, definitely.
As far as I'm concerned, the two huge things with the iPhone are the on-screen keyboard, which actually works, and the browser and the swiping and all the multi-touch stuff going on, going through Google Maps, etc., and all those things. And with my limited time with the Desire, all those things were just as good, if not better. And it actually had live updates and a big, beautiful clock on it, which the iPhone doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you get into your iPhone, you unlock your screen, and then you have a bunch of app icons.
It's a lot of pushing to get any information out of an iPhone user interface.
Yeah.
Apart from the time, possibly the date, and maybe the Wi-Fi strength. Well,
that's very true. I mean, yeah, you can't get anything out of it unless you jailbreak it. But that's the last thing I'd do, really. I mean, you've actually jailbroken.
I can't stand the iPhone without jailbreak. It takes too long to do anything. It's too much.
You're a brave man. I mean, seriously, it's like, doesn't it kill the battery?
No,
I've tried it before. And
no, it's a common misconception that it kills the battery. What does kill the battery is having things running in the background. And jailbreak does allow you to run daemons, but as long as you keep it to a minimum and only really load up what you absolutely need, it runs fine. It's as stable as the un-jailbroken system.
So it's safe to say that in terms of flexibility, the Android totally wins anyway, which is pretty obvious anyway, because you can add widgets and arrange. Well, I mean, you can also arrange icons on the iPhone, but you can't add widgets on the iPhone, which is very, very. I found it to be very useful. I can get a news feed, Twitter feed, and there's this thing called FriendStream on HTC as well. But whatever. So I mean, yeah, I like it. I totally like it. And the AMOLED screen. Now I look back at the iPhone, I'm like, whoa, what was I looking at all these years? You know, it's been the same, pretty much the same screen over the last 3 years, the last three generations.
It has, yeah.
And man, we'll talk about the iPad in a bit, but looking at the IPS screen on the iPad, because I've got the new iMac. You guys have maybe seen it.
Yep.
And maybe the
27 inch.
I do. I have a thing.
Wait, was that the Core i7? Can we just make sure it's Core i7, right?
It's the Core i7.
Is that the most expensive iMac you could possibly buy, perhaps?
No, I didn't put in SSDs, you see.
Oh wow.
Positively limiting yourself.
Now people are going to come breaking into my flat, so great, thanks. But no, seriously though, maybe the next iPhone won't go into the AMOLED screen because Samsung might charge them like a hell of a lot of money. But maybe, I don't know, so maybe some tiny IPS screen. I don't know if that's possible. I'm just saying that's what I'm seeing right now.
Well, I mean, my impression is the jump between the iPhone 3G and the 3GS was, to minor. Me, insignificant. It was a minor one. In terms of the physical design, there was nothing, right?
No, nothing.
Just nothing. Hmm. So it wasn't much of a jump. It was like a little bump. So they've had a lot of time, and all these phones that are coming out now are just significantly better in terms of hardware.
Hmm.
Never mind Android and the operating system. It's just the hardware itself is so much better. We already know about the HTC Evo 4G in the US and the Samsung Galaxy S.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen those things on video, and they're just spectacular. It's responsiveness. They've got all these moving backgrounds, which I will never use. But the point is, even while we've got background animations running, the swiping of the home screens is perfect. It's perfectly smooth. So all the hardware is bigger in terms of screen size, better. I mean, the Super AMOLED on Samsung's displays is
incredible.
So what these things are about, Apple is not just going to sit back and say, well, we'll just call it the iPhone 3GS Plus One. They're going to make a big jump. I get that point. But in calling it a death watch, it's really a death watch about the current generation iPhone.
Yeah, sure.
Because my imagination is that the fourth generation iPhone will be a significant jump forward, significant step forward. It might still be the best smartphone. But at the moment, the way that I'm looking at things is I mean, the HTC Desire is a lot more affordable. It has...
Oh yeah, it's out on what? T-Mobile for how much?
£130 for the phone, and then £15 a month on an 18-month contract, which includes free web access.
Unlimited. That's pretty damn.
Well, there's a 3 gig limit, but then you know, unless you're going to run a BitTorrent client on that, you're going to survive.
No, that. Oh man, if I'm not tied down to the my iPhone contract, I'd totally switch over.
I mean, for instance, O2 doesn't have a hard limit, but they start complaining after you hit a gig. And
Have you hit a gig?
No, but I know Ian Morris from CNET. Has run into that before.
Wow, what does he do?
Well, I have yet. I mean, I have no idea how much data I've used, but I've not. I've never.
You
had
don't know. I looked at mine and I've hit 300 something megabytes once. Even that's pretty extreme. So, God knows
that.
What
I mean, I can't imagine how much email that is. I've got six accounts going in there, wow. and it's going off every 5 seconds. I'm still not getting anywhere near a data limit.
Well, if we can talk about one of the obvious criticisms of the iPhone is it doesn't have Flash, so you can't go on YouTube and suck up bandwidth like
you
crazy.
Can go on YouTube.
Yeah, okay. Granted, but not on the YouTube standard YouTube web. Yeah.
And still not all the YouTube videos are still playable, viewable.
It's quite a lot.
Well, I know, it's quite a lot.
I mean, there's only so many lolcat videos you can take after. You know.
Lolcat saw yesterday.
But you know, that also reminds me about what you can actually do on Android nowadays as well. Mm.
Oh yeah. Actually, let's go back to Flash a bit. I tested the Flash on the Legend and Desire. It was pretty horrible from on the Legend. It was... the frame rate was hardly acceptable, but Desire was a lot better, but still not quite usable yet. There's still some work to be done, so I'm not even sure if Flash it's not a good year for Flash, basically.
I'm personally not a fan of Flash on a mobile device. I do subscribe to Apple's criticism that it uses up way too many resources. We've heard a lot about MacBook Pros just going, you know, into overdrive because there's just some little bit of flash
going. Tiny flash out.
No. Chris Siegler, Engadget mobile editor, he's got this brilliant quote on Twitter. He said, "Oh, what's this fan under my crotch? Ah, it's my MacBook player trying to play Flash."
For those of you who are Mac heads, you'll know. But those who are strictly PC guys or have never really experienced it, until the latest betas of Flash have come out. It really was like trying to fry an egg. I mean, it got so unbelievably hot just running some puny little video. It's just a nightmare. Nightmare.
Dude, that's called multitasking. Cooking an egg.
Yeah, I didn't realise that was an advertised feature.
Right. But just getting back into it, let's set aside Flash. I do think we can get a better format. People get paid to code, so somebody somewhere has to figure out a better format. We can do that. Maybe it's HTML5, maybe it's not that, but that's not the point. One thing I noticed in my very limited time with an iPod Touch, which is like an iPhone without the 3G, basically.
Which generation was it?
Oh, the third generation, the latest.
Okay.
Latest iPod Touch generation. Well, some things I wanted to do, I wanted to get a video on it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and I have a bunch of AVI files. I'm not going to discuss how I got those.
Oh my god.
And I tried getting that onto the iPod Touch, nothing happened.
No.
And all these things you expect to do and you expect to have happen. I mean, an AVI file is like the most basic thing you expect your mobile device to do. And if it's supposed to be something you can play video on, that's what you expect to happen. Whereas with the iPhone or iPod Touch, you have to go through iTunes, you have to purchase stuff through them, you have to upload them. And there was actually a big deal about actually getting data off your iPod Touch and iPhone. Which apparently is a bit harder than you might imagine.
It is, yes.
All right, so all these things are, in fact, limitations. Another thing I tried to do was get a reliable IRC chat client or a reliable Google Talk client. And I ran across a bunch of apps. All of them were free. I wasn't in the mood to pay the...
What a surprise.
This is the flat way.
Look, it's Google Talk. I can do it for free on a laptop. Why shouldn't I be able to... Do it for free on.
So you can in the browser. There is a.
Well, in the browser, but the point is, get an app. So.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Well, I mean, the browser comes with all the browser elements, whereas an app can just be optimized for chatting. And the other thing is you should be able to do in the background and stuff like that. And I know people have done it. I know people with iPhones who've got background chat apps, and then they can go in and out of them, still use the iPhone. It's fine. I'm just saying, in my experience, I tried 4 different apps. All of them disconnected me from IRC. Richard came over with his Android sales kit.
Oh, instant convert.
Right. And okay, he showed me this on the Dell Mini 5, which is a ridiculously large screen for a portable device, we know. But it was beautiful. It was a nice chat client like you would see on your computer. You could do all the things you can do on your computer. And as I say, if you get the HC Desire with a good keyboard on it, then there's no problems. You've got your IRC chat. And that I could have done that within 5 minutes, you know, going Android Market, right, Richard?
Yeah, that's right.
You grab the application and it works.
And that's free as well. There are several IRC clients which are free or pretty affordable on the market right now. I mean, people say the market's a bit shabby, but there's enough goodies. There are enough goodies right now.
Yeah, so. It's only going to grow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, especially as the market share grows, developers just can't ignore the size of the potential markets there.
I mean, the only bug that needs to be fixed right now is that I have tried to pay for some apps. Like, I know Vlad wouldn't believe this, but
I'm very
in the sense that I can't believe this man is paying for apps. So anyway,
what was that $1,000 app? Did you get that for the iPhone?
Yes.
Man.
The I Am Rich app.
That was the most...
There isn't that $100 app now.
Yeah.
Are you aware?
Oh, I haven't bought it, no.
I mean, it's on Richard's backlog, you know. He needs to go through a few others. But no, there's an $100 app which I believe it downloads websites while your iPhone is in idle or whatever. So when you don't have... Actually, I think this is for the iPad. I'm breaking the rule of not talking about it. But this app has just come out where it downloads information updates on a website. So when you don't have a 3G or wireless connection, you can get something close to the latest information.
And it's $900?
Yeah, I think it's to do with government organizations, so they get the latest data coming in, that kind of thing. But it exists.
Fair enough.
Well, I have not bought this, just for the record.
Right. Well, I mean... yet. Maybe something applicable to your past. I mean, there are relatively expensive iPhone apps that try and help you pass your bar exam. I know that a couple of the law schools in America have released basically their textbooks in an iPhone form, complete with the texts and videos and a run through everything you need to pass your bar exam. I guess it's not guaranteed.
Sorry, what's a bar exam?
It's a lawyer qualification. In order for you to be a practicing attorney at law in the US, you have to pass the bar.
So here we have law school that is after a law degree. Is that right?
Right. Well, you do your law degree, then you do the bar vocational course. Then you try and get a pupillage, which involves a lot of sucking up to people you don't particularly like. And then eventually you get paid a lot of money. That's the long and the short of it. Yes. I don't know how much an iPhone app is really going to help. The really big, thick, fat textbooks are still the number one route for most people.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's insane. I mean, do you guys see, like, will books be gone in, like, 20 years time?
I hope. Depends on the cost, though.
For the sake of your kids, huh?
Yeah, save the planet and all that.
And the planets, yeah. Anyway, so...
Well, okay, let's try and summarise this. Now, my personal opinion on this right now is if I was buying a smartphone, wasn't locked down to my current contract, I would probably just get the HC Desire and I would look to Android first. Because the iPhone is really, it's a known quantity and its benefits are probably obvious to most people. We don't really need to lay them out or the good things about it. But the things that I mentioned, which is that it's a lockdown ecosystem and that you always have to have iTunes, which I've hated since it started existing.
Well, iTunes on the Mac does run better.
Presumably, I mean, yeah. But again, I've got an old MP3 player, and that works as a mass storage drive.
Why
the iPhone, iPod Touch don't work in the same way? It's not even a question. It's just Apple's choice.
It is, yeah.
Right. So we know it's locked down. So my personal opinion is I'll go Android first, iPhone second. So what I want to know from you guys is where you stand, because I know Richard is somewhere in between, and I know you, Sam, have your iPhone. And I'll stick him with it?
Is that okay? I must admit, Android has tempted me in the last couple of months. And I'm still running the iPhone 3G, so I haven't jumped onto the latest and greatest of Apple's progeny. But it's one of those things that I'm going to wait until Apple will have... I mean, it's going to release a new iPhone if it keeps with its traditions. And it should be in June.
June, July? What's the date?
June. Well, last time it was in June.
I mean...
It's always been in June anyway.
But didn't someone say they've booked?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so there's a lot of conspiracy theorists looking at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. I think it's in the US. And it's booked for a corporate event around the 23rd of June.
Which normally means...
The only people who book corporate events without announcing their names are Apple.
Yeah.
So it's very likely the end of June we'll see a new iPhone. We know that bit. But
that would definitely keep with tradition.
It's actually the Engadget Show Live. We're just going to take over place.
No. Right.
Okay. Whatever.
Are you going to fly out there for that one too?
You know, there's no Engadget Show without Richard Lai anymore. It's... I mean, the airlines are just rejoicing right now. They're like...
You know what? He could pay for us with his air miles to fly out. that's where I stand. I mean...
But let's say you lost your iPhone and you had to buy a new smartphone.
Ooh.
Right now.
Yes. Right now. Wow.
I would probably...
And let's throw out your contract as well. So you're not bound by contract.
If money is no object.
No, money matters. I'm just saying, set aside your contract. You're just a completely new guy walking into the smartphone world.
No, but it's Sam. Have you actually played with an Android phone?
Yes.
Okay, which one?
I've played with the Hero. I've played with the G1
okay.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
it's definitely come a long way, that's for sure. I know you're not going to like me for this, but I'd probably go for the Nexus 1.
Wow.
I mean...
But the Nexus 1 ahead of the iPhone 3GS.
Yes, this stage.
Well, yeah, because 3GS is outdated, kind of.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm a big fan of OLED, and AMOLED really, I think, is the way forward. Especially looking at what Samsung's doing with it. I mean, I know. Especially the Nexus One's got some display issues. Depending on how you look at it, has display issues, especially around pixels and the number of pixels that it's got, and the way that the colours are approximated. But at the end of the day, it gets the updates fast. The Android is going to a place where I think it's comparable to the iPhone OS, and in some cases easier to use. And the hardware's good. I mean, you can't knock HTC hardware.
No, definitely not.
Apart from the... did you guys see the Moto Test Labs testing of the touch screens?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody bangs on that the iPhone has the best touchscreen interface and experience.
Mm.
And, I mean, to be fair, the screen held up the best. It was...
Yeah.
And that's... One of the things I absolutely love about the iPhone is the, and we've mentioned it before, is the virtual keyboard. I mean, I can type on that almost as fast as I can on a laptop keyboard, so maybe the screen contributes to that.
But you trying to hit the Hero as well?
Yeah, I didn't get on with it.
Really?
As well.
Wow. I don't know if you've played with it, but...
Not the Hero. But... I mean, the only... on-screen keyboard, software keyboard that I've seen that has impressed me, apart from the iPhone, is the Desires. Everything else has not been responsive enough.
Not even the Legend?
No.
Wow. Interesting.
No. Okay. Well, let's not forget, while we're discussing that, Samsung have come out with a fancy new touchscreen integration where they integrate the touchscreen layer, or the capacitive layer, into the... display itself.
Yeah, the actual display
rather
there.
Than on top of it. Which I'm not going to pretend to understand what the hell it does, but well, apparently
Let me try, because I actually hit that post. But so the idea, this is the Super AMOLED screen, and basically with the old screens, you have the digitizer layer, the touchscreen layer, basically the glass, and then the layer of the actual display. So what Samsung has done is to pretty much fuse the two layers into one. And therefore, because with the current AMOLED screens, you can barely see it in the daylight. It's pretty much a mirror.
It is, yeah.
It's horrible. But we've actually seen this Super AMOLED screen back in Mobile World Congress.
Yes.
And it was beautiful. It was pretty much like what current LCDs are doing. So,
if not better. I mean, it was a total revelation to me when I saw the video of it.
It's beautiful. So
no, absolutely. But the point I was raising is, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, right now on a smartphone, Super AMOLED is far and away the best display in terms of the display.
Mm.
But my expectation is that with that integration of the touchscreen into the display, we might get more responsive keyboard, on-screen keyboard, or
possibly
touch experience. We don't know, obviously. We don't know yet, because most of these devices aren't even out yet.
Mm. We look forward to it.
And we'll be here.
Yes, we know one of us will be purchasing them. That's for sure.
No, I'm sure we'll get a review unit from someone.
Right.
So anyway, so what's next?
Well, hang on.
Have we made a conclusion?
We have a conclusion. So... buying a smartphone, and apologies for all the fans of the BlackBerries and the Nokias and all those...
Windows 7?
Windows Phone 7.
Windows Phone 7 does exist, but BlackBerries and Nokias exist, and Symbian's claims to be a smartphone OS also exist. We're not discounting those guys.
Migo? What about Migo?
That doesn't exist.
Have you guys... Well, it's just come out for the coders, for the engineers.
But the general point is we wanted to limit
in the stores today. Yeah.
Yeah, we're salespeople here. let people make their own choice. But the point is, we limited it to Android. We know that other operating systems exist and options exist for people. But my point was, picking between the iPhone today and an Android device, I would pick the Desire. Samuel would pick the Nexus One. And all that remains is for Richard to give us his choice.
Ah, wow. So many choices. I used to be a big fan of the Mini 5 because it was just insanely huge, yet still fits in a pocket.
Trench coat pocket.
Or baggy ass jeans pocket.
I'm no hippie, man, so... can't believe I said that. It's... Now that I've played with the Desire and the Nexus One, I just feel like going back to a more natural... naturally sized phone, but I don't know yet. I mean, the Mini 5 is still going strong, I which is why I haven't sold it yet. But if anyone's up for grabbing it, then you're welcome to send us an offer. And
okay, sales pitches again. No, come on, Richard, just pick one. No, nobody's going to hold you to this. Nobody's going to force you to spend money on it.
No, I haven't made up my choice yet. I mean, it really depends on. I don't know. Okay, fine. I'll just say the Desire. I'll say the Desire.
Great choice. I have to agree with that one.
For once, we agree on something. So, okay. So, great.
So we have a very good consensus that says that the iPhone is basically dead.
For now.
Nobody should buy the iPhone again.
sorry, Steve Jobs.
At the moment.
Until June, when obviously the resurrection is coming.
Yeah. Born again.
We're not going to get invited to... The Apple events now.
Not that we'll get invited to Apple events in the first place, but...
It's
like getting blood out of a stone.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I would be fired by Engadget.
Okay, so moving on. Our next topic of the day comes from Samuel.
Hey.
So, those listening outside the UK, this may not be applicable to you, but the American consumer electronics retail giant Best Buy is going to make a move in the UK. I mean, it's been on the cards for ages, and they've had a partnership with Carphone Warehouse for at least the last year. And they finally announced that they're Virgin UK store is going to be Thurrock in Essex. Now,
yes, that's right. Yes, yes. That's the first store. That's like east of from. I'm trying to work out. Look, I'm like the only Chinaman here, so I get away with this.
It's outside London.
Outside London, sure. Okay. East of London.
Yeah, yeah. And we you know, it opens in May. Now it's correct. It's going to be basically their US model transported to the UK. So we're talking a massive store with stores within stores, and service with a smile. Now,
oh, God.
They're also launching two others in June, one in Merry Hill, which is in the West Midlands, and one near my hometown, Southampton, in Hedge End. Now, for those of you who know me, I have a kind of a personal connection with this, as my father runs an electronics retailer down in Southampton. So I have a bit of an inside track on this. But I know for a fact that our big chains,
DSGI,
yeah, which is Dixon's, Curry's, and PC World. Yeah. So basically everything you see on the high street these days. and Comet, which is still going. Kudos to them. The other main electronics retailer in the UK with brick and mortar stores happens to be John Lewis. Now, they've been on an all-out battle to try and win market share prior to the introduction of Best Buy, because it was announced over a year ago that they were intending to try and make a move here. And so they've been slashing their margins. And it's been great for a consumer because you've got more for your money than you ever have before. But it's not sustainable. It's not something that especially the UK electronics market can sustain. And I think we're probably going to end up with Best Buy Armageddon, where we may end up with one or two battling it out for supremacy, a bit like the Americans ended up with Circuit City and and Best Buy. Now, that doesn't mean that the more local chains, larger independent retailers may survive, but it's going to be definitely our high street's definitely already changed and is going to continue to change with your locals and your independent retailers really suffering from the introduction of these massive warehouses outside of town.
So is that the thing that we expect to happen, is that the smaller retailers will get edged out by people who can basically underprice things in order to push them out of the market, essentially, right?
So what happens in the UK is you have basically, broadly speaking, you have two sections of the market. You have the chains, which barter for their own, they have their own accounts and they barter for their own prices from the manufacturers. And then you have the independent retailers. Now, most of the independent retailers have clubbed together into what's called buying groups, which is basically operates on a similar level to what the chains do. And they barter for large volumes of stock to try and get the price down. And in most respects, they have at least the same amount of buying power, if not more than the chains. But what happens is that the smaller businesses have higher operating costs because you have more admin staff, more sales assistants in a smaller premises often. And so they're getting pushed out, especially with high business rates, although I know they've just taken a cut in the UK budget. But yeah, I mean, we've already seen that more and more independents are closing up shop, which is a sad state for the UK consumer electronics retail, at least.
Right. Well, actually, let's mention that this type of warehouse type of store isn't a new thing in the UK. We do have a PC World and Curry's. They do run these warehouse type stores as well. Now, I do see some good inside this, because For those in the UK, if you've been to the some of the PC World stores, the service is absolutely just hopeless. I mean, some of these guys like don't even know the difference between what differences are between one graphics card and from one graphics card to another.
Well, let's not be too harsh. Let's not describe them as hopeless. I think the major thing is that, and we kind of expect this now walking into these stores, is that we know far more than the people who are trying to sell us the stuff.
We are not Joe Public. We're much more
informed. We're not Joe Public, but the trouble is, the person selling the PC or the MacBook or whatever it is should be closer to us in terms of knowledge and qualifications than Joe Public. Whereas me and Richard had this experience in PC World where we were looking at
a MacBook.
Yeah, that's right. We're looking at the latest MacBook Pro. And the young lady, again, she wasn't hopeless. She was very nice and friendly. But she started telling us about its LED screen. And I let those things go because I'm used to it. But Richard was like, no, I'm sorry. What did you say it was? An LED screen? Could you describe the technology for me?
I did not.
No, I can do it. I know. But he started pointing out to her that it's an LCD screen with LED backlighting, etc., etc. And I could just see her eyes glazing over. I mean, this was so far beyond her comprehension. So maybe his point is correct that if Best Buy brings a better qualified class of service, it doesn't necessarily need to be with a smile, just with a bit more intelligence and awareness of what you're selling. That would be a good thing. Now, I also agree with you, Sam, in that the more of these huge chains that we have around, the worse it would be for us. Because then you basically end up with a duopoly, if you like. There's a big group of Dixons and Company, and then there's Best Buy. And if one guy doesn't want to cut his prices, the other guy has no incentive to cut his prices. So, you know, basically the more market...
competition.
Yeah, the more competitors we have in the market, the better prices are for us. So, as you say, it's been a short-term benefit for us with John Lewis and everyone's chopping prices because of Best Buy coming in. But in the long term, it doesn't look so rosy.
No, I mean, I'm biased from an independent standpoint. I mean, the kind of service that you get historically, and I know it's not the rule for everything, but is a lot more informed, better. You know, they're closer to the product. They're much more involved in it because it's their lives rather than as maybe quite a lot of the electronics salespeople are transitioning through life. I mean, you know, it's the kind of job that you get if you say like waitering. I mean, not many people make a career out of waitering, and not many people make a career as being a salesman. So,
no, actually, that's true because I recently met a Dell PR person, and he actually used to work at a PC World in like Heathrow Terminal 1.
Blimey!
And so it's like you said, it's they don't.
No, your point is very good, Sam, about independents being more involved in what they're selling. Because Richard and myself, we came across this camera shop in Tottenham Court Road, which I shamefully can't remember the name of right now.
Oh, gosh.
But it's terrific.
We'll put it in the rundown.
That's right.
Spectrum.
Yeah. Spectrum, yes.
Yes.
Which is right next to Warren Street Station. And those guys are ridiculously knowledgeable about cameras. Like, I got half my education in that store. Shamefully enough, again, I didn't buy a camera from them.
Send Richard around, you'd be all right.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, Richard.
I am never going back.
Fisheye lenses, man. We need some fisheye lenses. You know that.
I know, but...
He's so easy to convince.
When you say we, I like it when you say we, but
and then
I'm
you
the
can
one.
Buy, yeah, exactly.
And then you would borrow it for like weeks.
Yes.
Vlad Savov, the freeloader.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair.
Man. So, but yeah, it's kind of a shame watching all these giants gobbling up some of the small shops. I mean, a lot of the shops I go to on Tottenham Court Road aren't particularly great, but I do know there are some shops, small shops dotted around the country which are provide some pretty amazing services.
London's probably not a good model for your local stores. I mean, they're under much higher pressures from the cost.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, my final point with the whole Best Buy thing is that in the UK, we don't have the same culture as they do in America, especially based around that the kind of personal service and tipping. I mean, in the UK, we tip if the service is good. But it's at your personal discretion.
We only do that in restaurants, though.
Oh, yeah, true. And it's, the idea of tipping somebody who serves you in a shop, you'd have to be a really good friend with them or something like that. It just wouldn't even come across my mind.
Or if it's a cute girl.
Oh, so. Yeah, you try and write your number on a $10
note. Yeah, so like a sort of low-level
prostitution. Whoa, how?
Like, I'll slip you £2, you give me a smile. Come on, let's do some business.
That's... Hey, well, Sam, you actually write, you've done that before? You write a number on a bill?
I can't say I've ever tried it, I've never needed to.
Now you're just being cocky. I mean, Sam's the only guy here with a girlfriend, so just so you know, the two of us are here.
Richard.
What?
Tech.
And that's a personal advert from one Richard Lye. Contact
hey,
details.
Hey, whoa. I'm helping out with bro here as well, man.
So far, Richard Lye has tried to sell us his Dell Mini 5. And he's trying to start up a personal dating service.
Yeah. Oh, this is...
I'm not going to make any jokes about Chinese people. But,
Whoa. We've got billions of Chinese listeners.
Okay.
Billions.
Okay.
Yeah, they go around the great firewall of China, man. They can do it. They'll be listening.
No, but we have billions of Chinese listeners.
Oh, already.
If you listen to this and you're Chinese, give us a bell.
Okay, all right.
So, back to the point. So the whole kind of like nicey-nicey, smiley-smiley service with a smile is not exactly the British way of doing things. I mean, even the most knowledgeable people might serve you, they get excited about the thing, but they're not really that excited to see you. They want to sell you something. They don't want to be your best mate. If you're being your best mate helps them sell you something, they'll be it. But, you know, they're not going to hold your hand as you walk down the street. Whereas the American system, especially in Best Buy, from my personal experience, they've been over the top nice to you the moment you enter the store. And I don't know whether it's something they tip. Have you ever bought something in Best Buy and tipped the person who sold it to you?
I have been to Best Buy. Vlad, did you ever make it to?
No,
you missed out. No, that never occurred to me. I mean, there's the tax, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I bought something from it, but I'm traditional British, and I didn't even think about it. The guy was a bit shirty. I don't know whether that was because he was having a bad day or because I didn't tip him. It didn't even occur to me at the time.
I'm pretty sure you don't tip.
But I definitely know you tip installers or something like that. Somebody who comes around to install
stuff. Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
But it's not something that's naturally in the British psyche. And I don't know whether the American model of trying to sell electronics with that kind of service, which is what Best Buy pride themselves on, is actually going to work here. I mean, personally, I'd find it irritating.
Actually, I've been to Best Buy a few times myself. I haven't really noticed any difference between them and
really?
Our version here in the UK. So, but we'll see. It's what? We're 1 month away now, so...
Well, yeah. As far as getting an early indication of what the Best Buy experience might be, wouldn't we look towards the Apple Store, for example?
Because yes.
I would imagine they do things the American way there.
Well, they have the most... I think large Best Buys have an Apple division in them run by Apple people.
So do we in PC World, especially the new stores. There's one in... down in Wandsworth.
Are they actually Apple people?
Run by Apple people, yeah. Because yeah, I asked them and they said, yeah, we're different.
Yeah, it's just a store in a store, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I actually find the... although it's successful, the Apple retail experience frustrating. I often don't want a lot of help. I already know what I'm in there to buy by the time I get there. I don't want somebody telling me that... I just want them to get me it and sell it to me, and having to find someone to make a purchase, one of the guys with walking around with a handheld, rather than go to a till, I actually find irritating.
Hang on, are they forced to have to explain to everything?
They often don't. I mean, especially in the Regent Street Apple Store and the Westfield Apple Store. I haven't gotten any experience of any other Apple Store, so I don't know what they're like across the country. But it's not like you can grab something off the shelf and go straight to the till.
Yeah.
There may be someone there, but there's normally a massive line because it's one person. I mean, the rest of the what would be to a till to me is actually the Genius Bar. And it's more of a service thing. And whereas you're meant to find somebody with one of their portable
handheld tills,
To buy something. And to me,
so you're just saying the problem here is that you struggle to find someone free who can do the checkout.
For yeah, I mean,
but what I also think what Sam is referring to is kind of a gender gap in shopping habits as well, because. I am like Sam. I like to walk in, grab whatever it is I want. If it's a pair of jeans or a camera lens, just boom, boom, and get out.
Yeah.
Seriously trying to avoid being sexist here. But a lot of women prefer to go in, to have a browse, to have somebody give them a few tips or directions or whatever it is. That's where you get the shopping experience. Whereas we're not interested in shopping experience, we're interested in shopping efficiency.
Yeah.
Which Apple doesn't seem to offer.
No.
Quite in the predictable and easy way that we're used to. Grab it, go to the till, get out.
Depends on what day it is, to be honest.
Yeah, true. I mean, I have been in there when it's been me and maybe three others, and then probably 15 staff. So it's not, I mean, it's not exactly hard to get something purchased.
It's got to be better, especially for London, because they're opening a new store soon in Covent Garden.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's all covered up right now, but the constructors have been... So.
I mean, I'm not knocking it. It is successful.
Yes.
Sure. It's just not the way I want to shop.
But can we also... I can't possibly talk about the Apple Store without discussing the people that use that store. Because setting aside all the clichés about Apple fans, there are weirdos in there.
Oh, yes.
There are weirdos specific to that store.
Yes.
Who come in and work. For example, some people
That's okay.
But then, and then there's the one that Richard is thinking of right now, which was this guy who started recording his, rap career.
Yes.
On an iMac.
Yeah.
It was just like the iMac.
What?
We saw him together, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and he started talking about where he's from and what he's gonna do and how he's gonna rise to the top.
Rise from the ghetto, man. Yeah.
Yes. And we're standing next to him. And I can't even bear to look at him because I'm embarrassed on his behalf, you know? It's just that weird. And, this doesn't get enough attention. Like, the things that happen to people when they enter the Apple Store.
That's part of the experience.
Yeah, right? You enter the reality distortion field.
That's right.
I mean, it's not a store, it's a gateway to another universe.
I don't think it's possible that there are no actual bona fide Apple fans. Maybe you just like brainwash people. People who just walked into the store and then just boom, it's gone.
If you happen to be the Apple Store rapper and you're listening to this, and you'd like to send us a
video,
clip, yeah, a clip or
a demo tape,
yeah.
Keep it old school.
We need a theme tune, by the way.
Yeah, we're seeking a theme tune. Maybe you can produce something for the rap sheet.
Oh dear.
Anyway,
yeah, we're looking for something along the lines of Rick Ross, "Every Day I'm Hustling."
Yes, yeah.
But with a UK theme.
Yeah, yeah, and especially and try and get a bit more of a maybe a London-based thing going. It'd be down, and might even get you some popularity.
Oh yes,
not guaranteed.
With our billions of Chinese fans, I mean, you're gonna be huge. you're gonna be all over that part of the world. There'll be no place in Asia where you won't be heard of.
They'll build a statue of you. They'll make all sorts of toys and stuff. But anyway, right. So now moving swiftly on. Actually, speaking of London, I don't know if you guys. Whoa, what's that? Vlad just did something funny, magical. I don't know. Anyway, so I don't know if you guys have experienced this before, but in the UK, there have been a few scams going on the streets, that is, where you get this this random person coming up to you and say, "Oi lad, come over here," and then they point to a bag of theirs and say, "Oh, we've got a brand new MacBook Pro in there. You know, well, do you want to buy it? We're gonna sell it to you. We want some quick cash." And the idea behind this, and this has actually been demonstrated on The Real Hustler, this TV show, is brilliant. So what they do is they show you the actual gadget, and then while you're digging out your cash from your wallet, they actually swap over with a bag full of stones or something like that.
Bricks, yeah.
Yeah, and then if you're not smart enough and not failing to check it before the guy drives away, you actually get a bag full of stones, and the guy's got your cash.
Rather expensive.
Yeah, so, rather expensive gems. So,
and the other thing is, even if it's like a really nice laptop bag, you're never going to use it, are you?
No.
Because you're going to be so busy, you're going to go and burn it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what happened to me was two weeks ago, I was waiting outside, waiting for someone in this nice little village, just not far from central London. And then this random dude...
Great context, by the way. This really contributes to the story.
Yeah. What are you... painting a picture for us.
It was a rainy day. I was all moist and all... Oh, no. Oh, dear. Sorry about that.
Which is what happens when it rains upon you.
It's my limited vocabulary. But anyway, so this dude just drove up in his... your silver car. This is a regular white dude, you know, with a posh, well, yeah, kind of a posh accent, maybe. And he just pointed at me and said, "Hey, come over here a sec." And I thought he just wanted some directions.
Or to mug you.
Or to mug me, yes. Yeah, mugging a Chinaman another day in London. And this guy, he had this bag, and he didn't show it to me, but he said it's got a brand new MacBook Pro inside, and he wanted to sell it to me. And obviously, because I know the kind of scam that people are falling into, I just said no. And that guy was like, "All right, fine," and he just drove away. And that was bizarre. That was the first time I've had...
How much did he want, bro?
Yeah.
I didn't ask, because it was kind of an obvious... Why would the guy just...
No,
sure. Drive up and see.
Should have asked what kind of warranty we'd have provided with it. An after sale service, tech support lines, or something like that.
No, I should have just asked. Did you steal that? Did you steal that? And that guy, I'd love to see his reaction. But seriously though, it's don't go for it. Actually, that wasn't the only time. Literally today, before I came here for the show, these three lads. They walked towards me. They looked at me as if they're like, "Oh, check it out! There's a Chinaman. We can sell him some gadgets because they're gonna buy it." What? So, anyway,
I think it's just because it's not so much just because you're from China. I think they saw a foreigner.
Foreigner, yes.
Affluent foreigner.
Well, you can't tell that because Richard doesn't actually spend money on clothes or anything important like food. He spends all his money on gadgets. That's straight enough. But I think the other point that Richard is making is that perhaps they saw somebody who looks from foreign origin and isn't that used to whatever...
Gullible.
Yeah.
Not necessarily gullible, but not used to whatever's happening in London. Because Richard says, the person who approached me in the car has zero chance of swindling him. Because he's an experienced Londoner and he knows...
he's wise to it.
Yes.
Streetwise.
That's right. So, yeah, I think that's the point here is that even though we're kind of on the back end of a recession or whatever the hell's going on, I think with all the national debt the UK has, this recession, it's not going to end anytime soon, but we still shouldn't be buying things from random strangers who walk in free, right?
What I'm saying is that I find it bizarre that I've lived in London for a few years now, and this is the first time that I've seen this happening to me over the last 2 weeks. This twice. You know?
Yeah, I must admit, I've been here 7 years, and it's only happened to me recently, too.
Recently, yeah. So,
and I'm the champion. I've been here 13 years.
13 years, North London, nothing happened. Wow.
Nothing...
what happened? You got a story?
Nothing noteworthy.
Oh...
I mean, actually, normally I get offered drugs. But not.
Oh yeah, I've been off of drug, sex, and everything. Is
so, mate. All right, okay.
Wow. I've been offered to be paid for sex. I think that's noteworthy.
Right.
Okay.
And,
So
now we've got an Android shop, a dating website, and a prostitution racket going on here.
So yeah, Sam, you've got to offer something there. Yeah. But seriously, guys, just don't fall for this. I mean, it doesn't only apply to just us Chinese folks. Seriously, according to the Real Hustlers anyway, I mean, anyone can fall for this. So just don't buy stuff off the streets from some random dude.
Right, and as far as I'm concerned, buy your stuff online.
Or eBay, which...
No.
Whoa.
We don't have enough time to discuss eBay.
All right.
Personally, I usually only ever shop in big chains that I know of or online. And primarily I shop online. Hmm. Again, from big stores that you know. And then even if something happens or... something doesn't work out, there's always someone you can sue. That's the major thing. If the place you're buying from has a headquarters, there's always somewhere that you can go and get redress. Whereas, as Richard says, the free guys in the street don't have a HQ.
They'll be gone forever. Yeah,
you'll never see them again.
Never. Oh well.
And if you do, you probably don't want to see them again.
Well, depends on what weapons you've got. So. But anyway, so yeah, that's pretty much me done. Yeah, now.
Right, on to Armageddon, I should think.
Wow. How are we doing? Okay.
So, the big topic, which is the obvious one, is the iPad.
Whoa.
Which has only just come out.
What? What's the iPad?
What's this?
I'm sorry?
Is that another form of personal hygiene?
No, it's...
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to have to fill you in that case. I don't know what sort of rock you've both been living under for the past, I don't know how many months. But yes, the iPad has just come out in the United States yesterday, Saturday. And a bunch of people have been queuing up, buying it, and trying to figure out what the hell to do with it.
Yeah,
it's true.
And for the third person in the UK, aside from you two, who doesn't know about it, it's a 9.7-inch tablet/slate PC device.
Oh, be careful there.
It's a personal computer.
Wow.
It is. Nobody has a trademark on that.
No, I'm just saying, it doesn't do everything.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But it just come out.
Yeah.
A lot of people like it. A lot of people have high criticisms on it. What I'm hoping we can do is, if possible, assess the thing on its own merits and just kind of set aside the fact that it's made by Apple or the fact that a bunch of people that we might consider dorky or uninitiated in the arts of technology might just buy it just for status and that kind of thing. And let's just discuss what it is, what it does, and how it helps us as we go.
Cool. Okay.
Right.
So, I mean, for those who've never seen it, if you imagine an iPod Touch... just blown up. That's basically what it is.
Technically.
I mean, that's what the criticism has been labelled at. It is just an iPod Touch Maxi, as it were. But
you really got to stick on to that game, aren't
you? That joke is so old.
I'm one of those people who is an early adopter in the sense of jumping in at the very first opportunity to buy it. I often don't have enough cash. I mean, if I had limitless cash, aka Mr. Richard Lai,
hey, come on, guys.
I'd probably, my small London flat would probably be full to the rafters of
look at your TV, man. I don't even have one.
But I've been looking at the iPad. Seriously, for the last couple of weeks at least, really evaluating whether I want to buy one. I mean, in the UK, it's due to be launched around about the 26th of April.
Something like that.
The date. I mean, I don't think it's been set yet, but that's definitely the rumor. As with all things Apple, rumors are run. Mm. Now, I my day job, as it were, is I'm a PhD student, a molecular microbiologist, which means that I end up reading quite a lot of papers, or I'm meant to. And I've been evaluating whether the iPad can provide that kind of reading device rather than printing off reams and reams of paper for it. And to that end, I've just got in a Mac journal organizing program called Papers. It's something that... Papers.
Oh, I thought you meant Pages.
No, Papers. Not to be confused with Apple's own Pages. Yes, yep. I've done that several times, trying to Google for it.
Well, that's Mac's version of Microsoft Word, by the way, Pages. So, yeah.
And for those who work in science or any sort of field that requires citations, the go-to app at the moment is EndNote, and it both organizes your library of journals, which normally ends up being enormous, but also allows you to put it straight into whilst you're writing into Word or something like that. But Papers takes a slightly different approach. It's more of a Mac way of doing things, but its interesting feature for me is that it has an iPhone version of Papers. And at the moment, you can sync it across and you can read on the go. But they also have an iPad version. Now, that screen is getting on the verge of being useful for reading. I mean, I've tried other ebook readers as a surrogate for paper, but it's been a decidedly frustrating experience. Not necessarily from the reading point, but getting it onto the device, having it recognized. I mean, journal articles are in the PDF format. It's always been that way, and I don't see it changing. I mean, sometimes you can get HTML versions of them, but they're normally distributed as a PDF. And some of them have metadata, some of them don't. And Papers really takes care of that, and might be the killer app for me for the iPad. Now, I mean, what's the estimated retail price? How much is it going for in the US at the moment?
It's $4.99 for the entry level. Which I think is a 16 gig.
Yep, Wi-Fi only.
Wi-Fi only.
I mean, if things go as they normally do from the American to UK conversion, they'll just swap the sign and it'll be exactly. £4.99.
I mean, right now you can use these services to get people to buy for you in the US and get it shipped. And the latest price I saw was for £470 for that 16 gigabyte.
Blimey.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's another point. I really like discussing it in the context of e-readers, because the e-reader market basically blew up in January at CES, where everybody has had some sort of e-reading device. But personally, I can't see the balance between the price that you pay for an e-reader at the moment and the benefit that you're actually getting. Because the price is around 200, maybe even £300, depending on what you want to get. And you get a device that isn't really terribly responsive or quick. If you're just going to sit down and read a book page by page by page, like a normal book, but in a very singular kind of way, like from beginning to the end.
Yeah, it's fine.
At a normal pace, it's fine. Right, I agree. And it gives you terrific battery life. Again, you can't knock it for that. But if you want to do something like a journal...
flick backwards and forwards.
Right, exactly.
Or a textbook, even.
Yeah. So I would do that with law papers. You don't read the 50 pages of an article. It's ridiculous. I mean, people get into these digressions that last like 5 pages. So you have to skip back and forth, back and forth. You have to be able to highlight things. Color helps in those cases. Mm. So my thinking is, if I really need that, an e-reading device, like you say... And the market is £200-300, and then somebody offers me the same, but with the quickness, with colour,
and with adaptability.
Exactly. And you're able to get 10 hours of battery life, which is what the reputed rate is for the iPad, but you pay, let's say, double the price even. Well, I would just go for the more expensive device and skip all these ones that just...
don't quite cut it.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I don't have a need for an e-reader.
No.
Personally, so I'm still not buying an iPad. I'm still not convinced by that, but I just think it gives you more than its actual addition of price compared to e-readers. It gives you more value than them. And whether it's the iPad or whatever other device it might be, I like it for that reason. I like the responsiveness and the quickness and you know,
Yeah, it's a snap, definitely a snappy performer. Yeah. I mean, for me, the pivotal point will be how it is actually, how the experience of reading on it is. Now, at the moment, if it's not printed, I'm reading it on a monitor, and I have an old cinema display at the moment, and it's acceptable, but let's just say I wouldn't read more than 10 minutes on it. After that, it's starting to kill both my eyes and my concentration, and I mean that's up in front of me. Having something in my hand may be a completely different experience.
Yeah,
reading on my iPhone is okay, but it's too small to really do it justice.
Yeah. I would also say is that I don't think the ergonomics of sitting in front of a computer display are ideal if you're going to do extended reading.
It kills you.
For the most part, you want to sit down in a more comfortable place. And this is the thing that struck me thinking about the iPad recently, because frankly, the past few days I've done nothing but think about the iPad. You just can't avoid the damn thing.
Yeah.
Is that it's actually, in spite of all the hype and all this superhero, talk that's related to it, or the revolution. I mean, it's Apple's fault as well. Why call it magical revolutionary? It's neither. I mean, particularly at the moment, it's neither. So let's just talk about it as a really good little extra gadget that we can have in our lives.
And maybe that's the pivotal point. It is an extra gadget.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but my thinking is the utility of this device is really nowhere near as glamorous as its reputation. Because we're talking about it as the next big step in computing, but in fact it isn't. It's just a thing that bridges a gap and fills what I see as a real gap, but it's a really unglamorous one. So for example, if you finished working or on your computer, you switched it off, and it's in the evening and you're watching television or you're laying down in bed and you just want to browse the web for a little bit. Let's say you want to look something up on Wikipedia, etc. Well, that's where the iPad is great, because you can just, you know, you turn it on, and that's why it's good that it doesn't have a full desktop OS. I don't know why people complain about having a full desktop operating system, because the lighter it is, the better it is, the quicker it is. So you turn it on, you get into the web browser, you punch in whatever you want to look at, and you're away, and you know, that does your 5-minute search, and then you can just get on with whatever you're doing. I found using the iPod Touch, for example, the screen was too small. So in fact, an iPod Touch with a bigger screen, in my book, is a good thing. Mm. So this is better than a netbook, if we can move into that direction, because lying in bed, reading on a netbook is uncomfortable, because then you don't actually need the keyboard. Then you actually just need a display. So my major thinking is it has a limited set of uses where it's superior to everything else. Like, it literally is superior to everything else, unless somebody comes out with an equally quick and responsive tablet. They're there. They exist. I just don't think they're as glamorous as people are portraying them to be.
No, I mean, your point about, I don't know why people don't complain, why people complain that it's not got a desktop OS. Now, I mean, I don't want a fully fledged desktop OS that you end up having to boot up and stuff like that. I want the instant on, it's also missing a few things for me that could really make it revolutionary to my computing paradigm, as it were. And that's mainly the common file system.
Mm.
There's no way of getting files into and out of applications from something like My Documents or, you know, some sort of common file storage solution. I mean, I know Michael Gartenberg's complained about that, and I know Joshua Topolsky in his pretty thorough review of the device,
which I edited, by the way. I contributed to that.
sorry, lad. I hate Steely Thunder, but it's almost there. It's almost there. I mean, to me, a netbook is still more useful. I mean, if I'm browsing in bed or on the couch or something, I actually end up using my iPhone. That's acceptable. It's useful enough for the things that I actually genuinely want to look up. And I use my netbook more as the cheap disposable computer that I can travel with, and if it gets destroyed, lost, broken, stolen, you know, whatever. It's not that expensive.
How much was your netbook?
I think it was £128.
This is insane.
But where did you steal that from?
So I know these guys on my local street.
The free guys.
Yeah. They were offering it to me around the tube station. No, I bought it off the Dell
refurb.
Refurb
outlet.
The outlet. But I managed to snag it without Windows on it, so that would lost the Windows tax. But with a hard disk.
Even with it, I mean, how much would it have been? Just 200 something.
180, something like that. Yeah. We're talking about the Dell Mini 10V, the old one, the one that's Hackintoshable, because that's what I've got it as. I've got it as a Hackintosh.
Nice.
Must admit,
isn't that illegal?
You're the guy who studied law here.
Well, I studied law. It doesn't mean I know the laws. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
But okay, my turn. So I agree with some of the points you made there, Vlad, except for the full OS thing. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I hardly ever shut down my laptop these days. I usually just shut down the lid on my MacBook, and it turns back on instantly whenever I open the lid. And the other thing is, I'm not as much of a reader as you guys. I mean, especially Vlad, because Vlad reads a lot of books, whereas I don't. But still, I've been thinking really hard these days as well.
Come on, Richard! You will buy an iPad the minute it pops up in the UK.
No,
this isn't even a question of thinking.
You want to bet on this? I mean,
yes.
Yes,
I'll bet a month's salary that you will buy an iPad.
Whoa! At the end of the year. I am so in. All right.
I was going to say like a fiver, maybe.
A month's salary from this show.
Okay. Wow.
No, seriously, it's like, this show. 1p. No, seriously, the thing is, I've got my insanely awesome iMac and my MacBook. So, I mean... Steve Jobs have marketed this thing as somewhere in between, not even those two, but like in between some sort of Mac and the iPhone. I've got a phone, and I use the phone in bed. But like, if I really want to do some web browsing or whatever on a big screen, I do that on my MacBook. And Josh has said, Josh Topolsky has said, it'll be an awesome device to have when you're in bed. And holding the tablet, but I think for those who've already got a laptop, I mean seriously, there's hardly a need for such a device. That said, when Apple announced it, they didn't have any third party apps at all, which is insane because this is what the iPad really is about. It's about what the other content providers can offer. I mean, we've seen some really awesome. I mean, Josh Dubowski went on Jimmy Fallon and showed off the Marvel Comics app. Now that's insane. That's what I would go for. But apart from that, I mean, the iPad is just.
Can we just bring that into UK vocabulary? Because you just described it as insane, which is an American word.
Is it?
Yeah. Nothing is insane about the application.
I mean,
yeah.
Sam, you understood me there.
Yeah, but that's
you're not even the English guy.
I'm the guy with the most experience of living in London. So,
ooh,
right,
wow. Huh.
But that's an American way to describe it, and we're trying to speak to the.
How would you put it? You've seen it as well.
Well, if we need to use a superlative word, we can say something like very good.
Let me just describe
fantastic.
I'll just describe it. The Marvel Comics app and several other magazine apps that are due to be out. They feature some really nice animations in between articles or even in between pictures if we talk about comics.
And they're flexible as well. They give you a flexibility of how you can look at it. Because you can look at it page by page as you would a normal.
Yes.
Or frame by frame.
Which is terrific. I'm a big fan of that.
Yes, so... But like I said, it's amazing how a lot of people have gone ahead and just to buy that thing without knowing what kind of apps they would get. Even even though some of the apps haven't been announced until a few days or even hours before the actual iPad launch. But still, for me, as a really not even a casual reader, it hasn't really gotten my attention yet. So no, so I don't think I will. I don't think I'll be getting it.
I mean, we're all most of our arguments so far have been based around using it as a reader, and I mean strictly, it's not a reader. I know Apple's pushing its iBooks, and if that does for the ebook industry what the iTunes store did for digital download of music, then I mean we're bye-bye Amazon. You know, it's a multi-purpose device that's aimed at all sorts of things. And I know you're very true with, you don't know what kind of apps were going to be designed for the iPad specifically.
Mm.
But I mean, you've got to remember that it comes from a culture of apps. The app culture is everywhere. I mean, you can't get a phone without something being branded as an app. And it was only a kind of a stretch to really think that you were going from something like the iPhone to the iPad, it wouldn't have a decent bespoke apps written for it. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, not just that. Also, you do get a reassurance with Apple because of its big name in history and the vast success of the App Store, that you're not just going to walk into a bare ecosystem. It was obvious, and if it wasn't obvious to anyone, the past week, every big website has been breaking its back trying to get an HTML5 version of its content, which to me it's hilarious and it's also sad because on the one hand everyone is breaking their back to serve Apple's interests and not to be left behind, which is their big interest.
Yeah.
But it's sad because HTML5 is, from what I know, manifestly better than Flash, and yet nobody bothered to pump out HTML5 version for people who might be interested in it until the iPad came around, and now everyone has it. So if you can just get it out within a month, let's say, or 2 months since the iPad's been announced, why haven't people done it before? That's the kind of regrettable part.
It's the carrot and the stick thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The carrot is the number of users, and the stick is, oh no, it doesn't work on one device, one landmark device.
Yeah.
However whether we like it or not, it is a landmark device.
So regardless of whether you'd actually buy one, you'd still have to thank the iPad for being a catalyst in the...
That much is true. You never have to buy it in order to experience the benefits of it. I agree there.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, you know, the iPad is not the only tablet computer out there at the moment. I mean,
The Juju.
Now, I mean, you...
I think the Juju is trash, and we need to stop giving it the credit that people want to give it. Okay, the Juju has an old Atom processor in it, which is, I was looking at Atom netbooks with that processor in February 2009.
I've got one.
Exactly, you've got that. It's a netbook minus the keyboard, and it's nowhere near as responsive. I don't even consider it part of the equation and conversation. I like that it has Ion, NVIDIA's Ion on there.
Oh, you love it.
Which is a good thing. Fair enough, but I still don't think it's part of the conversation. It's nowhere near as good, and that's just a bare fact borne out by the hardware and the specifications of the devices.
So what's left? What do we have now? Well, there's the Courier, which we don't even know if it's actually...
Yeah, so that's almost...
Let's talk about what's in the market right now.
Lenovo have that laptop which breaks out, the U100.
Skyline?
Skylight.
Yeah.
Skyline. Was
But I haven't had the chance to play with it or see it.
I've never seen it over here.
Personally, I don't know why it hasn't gotten more attention, because it's a netbook that breaks out into a screen. So it fulfills all these requirements that I described when you're using it on your bed or couch or whatever.
It isn't a full netbook experience once you've taken the screen off,
though. Yeah, it runs into some sort of Linux.
Yeah, it's got an ARM chip in it, hasn't it? Mm. It's not the actual central processing unit of the netbook is not in the screen. But I mean,
it becomes totally different thing. So
I mean, it does have nice hooks though. Things like you take your where you were browsing using the fully fledged PC straight into the ARM based operating system.
Yeah, but that's the other thing is, I mean, there is no other alternative. But let's Let's try and bring this back actually like a year or 2 years back. Because I still remember the first time that the Crunch Pad, which was the genesis of the Juju.
Mm.
What a ridiculous name.
What, the Juju?
The Juju.
What the hell? Is it any better? I mean, what, the iPad?
I mean, both were pretty rubbish, let's face it. but, okay, so when the Crunch Pad was first announced, and I remember reading about this, I thought, well, that's pretty excellent, you know? Yeah. It's like a 10, 12-inch device, $200, $300, which even at the time was kind of a silly price that they were coming up with. But forget the price. And it would just serve as, instead of your newspaper, it would just be your, like your web device. And, you know, it would have great battery life, it would be affordable, and it would just give you the web.
Mm.
Simplify everything. And when I read about that, I was like, that is excellent, I want one of those.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
And the Crunch Pad never materialized. It ended up as the Juju, which is a netbook without a keyboard.
2 years later.
Exactly.
And how much?
However much, I don't know the price. I'm not interested. I'm not going to buy it. You're not going to buy it. I'm not even going to take anyone talking to me about the Juju seriously. 90 people pre-ordered it. 90.
Oh, yeah. And 15
that's insane.
But that's only rumored. That's not definite. Only 90
right.
people.
Anyway, but my point is, again, set aside the Apple brand. Think about the hardware. This is the processor, the system inside this is equivalent to Tegra 2. It's very similar. It's built on the same ARM architecture. And that gives you just absolutely ridiculous battery life. You can get 150 hours or thereabouts of music.
Just,
I mean, that's a week's worth of music if you never turn on the screen. And something that Steve Jobs has also said is that the screen is the biggest power draw.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculously efficient system. So I'm really excited to see that ARM's A4 processor. I'm really excited to see Tegra 2 finally show up somewhere, because that is going to make whatever device it's on be awesome because of the battery life. And, you know, the IPS screen, like Richard says, it's a big jump. It's great. And then you've got the actual operating system and the responsiveness of it, which I've seen it on video, and it's ridiculously quick and responsive. Mm. I mean, that looks like a pleasure just swiping around. That's what I do with HTC Sense UI. I would just swipe around on the Desire because it's so quick and neat.
Coming from owning an iPhone, you know, when you first get it, I mean, it is fast. You can't deny that the user experience, because they've channeled it so finely, it is quick. And that swipiness is really nice when you first start playing with it. But actually, that loses its sheen quite fast. I mean, it's still useful, but it's not. I don't have pleasure in swiping across.
No, it's only because the iPhone. Yeah, they're all just a bunch of icons. Whereas on an Android phone, you get widgets, which are actually useful.
Well, I mean,
that's what I find anyway on the iPhone.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, but even in the apps that have swiping things, like swiping through my weather app or something.
Okay.
Like that, you know, I mean, it's an efficient use and interaction. But it's something I take totally for granted now. And in fact, when I come to something that doesn't swipe, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah, especially when they don't give you like the springy bounce when you get to the end.
I mean, so again,
well, I mean, we can discuss other things. I absolutely don't think that the iPad, this iteration of the device, is anywhere near the final word on this.
No,
I think tablets are going to evolve. They're going to get better.
Again,
and I think people are going to end up buying them for some strange reason. But I'm excited. I'm really excited about the hardware and what we can do, because for so long people have had operating systems which have been laggy and not immediately responsive to what you do. And this is why the iPad's hardware excites me, because whatever people are doing, you know, you tap here, boom, you get a window open, you get an application open.
Don't say boom.
Okay, Bing. How about Bing?
See,
Bing is perfectly balanced because it's a Microsoft word, but I'm using it in the context of Apple. So nobody can criticize that.
Wow.
But that's the point. That is the thing that makes me want to use devices and hardware, is when, you know, predictable stuff happens. It happens quickly, and as you say, you're not adapting yourself to it. It adapts to you. That's the right way to go.
Who said that?
Sam, this morning.
No. I didn't coin that phrase. I just used it.
I'm pretty sure somebody said it like a
Johnny Ive said that. You stole.
Hey, I didn't steal it.
Johnny Ive totally said.
I apologize, Johnny Ive. I'm sorry.
But anyway, look, what about Chrome OS? Because people are criticizing this for having iPhone OS. That's not a big problem for me. I'm a fan of minimal operating systems. I'm excited to see what Chrome OS comes up with. Because it's basically, it's the browser and a few other applications around it. I'm excited to see that. I mean, if I get a netbook with Chrome OS, which sucks even less power than Windows 7 ones, because Windows 7 ones, they use more power because of the actual desktop and operating system elements.
It's more demanding, yeah.
Yeah. So if you give me something perfectly stripped down like that, I would love to see it.
I mean, have you played with Chrome OS?
I have, just on my computer. That thing boots up in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, but you're putting it on computer hardware.
Like, well, it's like using a virtual machine.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But my computer isn't particularly powerful. I mean, in fact, you can get one of the Core i3 or Core i5 laptops that are faster than it.
Yeah.
So, but it's not. It's built for something weaker than that. Anyway.
So... But imagine having Chrome OS on a Core i5 laptop. I mean,
overkill. That's
there is no more sleep mode.
Would it play Doom? No.
In the browser, yeah. Oh, with HTML5 in the browser. Browser-based gaming.
Quake 2.
Oh my god.
They're on. You know, there's a Quake.
It was like last week.
What version of Quake?
Yeah, 2. It's definitely 2.
Yeah, Quake 2, yeah.
It's been out for a while.
No, I mean, you mean Quake Live.
That's right, that's the one.
Yeah, well, Quake Live is actually just a plugin that runs in your browser. I mean, it is the game. It's Quake 3. For those who don't know, it's id Software's Quake 3, basically adapted into a browser playing form. But, I mean, you've actually got a total rewriting of Quake 2, the original game, into an HTML5 based thing using... The OpenGL standard for was it WebGL?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's perfectly possible. Although, can you imagine trying to play a first person shooter on a touchscreen?
Well, obviously, we're not going to do that.
Pew pew. Tapping on the screen.
Look, that's where all the disadvantages of going with Apple are, because the thing doesn't have a USB port, which is a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
What's the deal with that stupid SD card reader that you have to stick in from?
Well, it's just like any other. I mean, you've had that thing for the iPod since the dawn of the iPod. You've had, because it used to be when the iPod Photo, was that like third generation?
Mm.
This dock adapter that basically allowed you to read cards. Well,
no, I mean, it's just silly how they can't even. I'm sure they can easily fit that in. I'm no Johnny Ive, but. Come on.
Well, yeah. if you've seen the iFixit teardown,
yeah,
that made me wince when they were breaking some bits off. But to get it open, they had to snap a few lugs. But it's there's quite a lot of space in there. You know, you've got two batteries, which is why it has tremendous battery life, apart from the power sipping. But you've actually got free space, a bit much more like a MacBook than an iPhone crammed in there. I mean, the logic board's tiny, so...
Yeah.
Why didn't they fit it in? Tactical. They didn't want to stick it
it's
in.
For, the, it's always about the next generation.
Yeah.
There's also the screen itself takes up that much space.
Yeah, true.
And the argument is that the bezel is as big as it is because you don't want to be touching the screen accidentally. Yeah. So presumably... the size of it is dictated by the screen more so than the hardware inside. I mean, that the CPU inside, Integra 2 as well, the actual system on chip is tiny. You could fit that in a smartphone easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh, the next iPhone.
Yeah, iPhone HD, perhaps?
No idea.
I don't care. I just want to get one of these processors in something.
Installed in your brain,
your hand.
You have a stripped down operating system.
Listen,
for Vlad.
If it gives me 10 hours of battery life, I can just like switch off my brain, switch over to it.
Vlados.
That's got to be his next tattoo. He's going to tattoo that A4 processor.
No.
A4 inside.
No,
A4 or die.
This is more of an ARM fanboy kind of thing because I'm a real fan of ARM's efficiency.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right, well, we better wrap this thing up.
Might as well.
Yeah, so
We'll have girlfriends to go back to.
If you've got through this far, thank you very much for listening.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. You get a free pass. If you've enjoyed this, please leave a comment on the blog. Or you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Samuel Gibbs.
I'm at Richard Lai. L-A-I.
And I am at Vlad Savov.
Or you can send an email to podcast@therapsheet.co.uk.
Yeah, nice.
We look forward to coming through your auditory canal in the near future.